Evictions in Maine. Every year in Maine, thousands of individuals and families are evicted from where they live. The reasons for the evictions can vary from case to case. One reason is a lack of affordable housing. Another big reason is that wages have not kept up with the increasing cost of housing. According to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, Maine's rental market is one of the least affordable in the country. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This week, Maine Public's Susan Sharon presents a series of special reports about eviction in Maine. Today, we'll learn more about the eviction process. What rights do tenants and landlords have when the rent can't or hasn't been paid? Have you or someone you know been evicted? Are you a landlord with tenants who can't pay their rent? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Last year, more than 5,700 eviction cases were filed with Maine courts. Aside from the obvious toll eviction takes on tenants, landlords also face challenges when the rent isn't paid. Eviction is the topic of a special series airing this week on Maine Public Radio. And today we're going to hear from two attorneys who work on each side of this issue. Frank D'Alessandro is with Pine Tree Legal and helps those going through eviction. Sam Sherry represents landlords in eviction proceedings. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the eviction process in Maine? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I want to thank you both for being here. But before we get to our two guests, we're joined now by Maine Public's Deputy News Director, Susan Sharon. Susan is the driving force behind the week-long series of reports on evictions in Maine that began airing yesterday and will air all this week. Thanks for stepping in a few minutes, Susan.
Thanks for having me.
Where'd the idea for the series come from?
Two things, really. It was prompted by the release of data from Princeton University's Eviction Lab. They created the first ever database of evictions from around the country based on court records and in combination with the U.S. Census. And then one of our partners at the Bangor Daily News, another reporter, tipped me off to the idea that we might want to take a closer look at this, especially in Lewiston, Auburn area, which has a higher rate of eviction than the national average, according to the lab.
What surprised you most about the people you met doing this series?
Oh, so many things surprised me. Matthew Desmond, who's affiliated with the Eviction Lab at Princeton, is the author of the book Evicted, which came out in 2016 and it won a Pulitzer Prize. And it was a really lifting of the veil into the Milwaukee community about evictions there and what it did to how it affected landlords and tenants and the community. And so with this story, very similar things I learned, which are that the people I met are so vulnerable to losing their homes and their possessions, but they're so resilient and they're strategic. And it was marvelous to see that. However, the effect of eviction on their families makes it very difficult for them to escape poverty.
Yeah, you know, when we're talking about people, we're not just talking about the adults who are supposed to pay the rent, but we are also talking about their children who have no choice in this matter.
Right. That was one of the surprising things. I think when you typically think about an eviction, you might think about some unruly tenant, you know, a couple or a single. But most of the people, according to the Eviction Lab and the people I spoke to, were families with kids, single households with kids.
What's coming up on the series?
Well, what's coming up, we're following two families through the eviction process and a retiree. And so we'll have their stories. And we're also going to spend a day at eviction court. And then we are going to hear from some advocates and landlords and others about what they think is needed to address this problem.
And those reports are going
running every morning on Morning Edition and every afternoon on All Things Considered?
On Maine Things Considered,
Maine
that's
Things
right.
Considered.
Yes.
Great. Thanks so much, Susan. That's Susan Sharon, Maine Public's Deputy News Director. Turning to our other guests now, I want to start by looking at the broad problem. As we mentioned before, 5,700 eviction cases in Maine courts last year. 400 of those evictions actually went through. Why? Is this simply because people can't make enough money to afford their rents, or is it something else, Frank?
Well, the overwhelming affordability is the real issue for our clients. There's a real lack of affordable housing for low-income people in the state of Maine and nationwide. We find that over and over again. If our clients don't have a subsidy, like a Section 8 subsidy where the federal government is paying a portion of their rent, people are not able to afford their rents. Even our clients who work, most of our clients do work. But they're all just one paycheck away from a disaster. The car breaks down, the kids get sick, they can't make it to work, they lose their job, and they can't pay their rent.
How long has this been the case? How long has there been this widespread lack of affordable housing, not just in the Portland area, but in other communities as well?
As far as long-term affordability is concerned for a tenant, that's been a problem for as long as I've been doing the work, and I've been doing it for about 30 years. But it has definitely gotten worse. In communities like Portland, there's less and less affordable housing. We're representing somebody this week in Portland District Court who's been in their unit for 17 years. The landlord has decided they want to do something else with the property. They've gotten served with a 30-day notice. So under Maine law, they don't have a lease. You can get your tenancy can get terminated on 30 days' notice without any reason. This person's received that 30-day notice. They've been in this place for 17 years. They've got to move out, and they have no place. They've been looking. There's no place in Portland for them to go.
And I want to return to that concept in just a minute. But Sam, I want to turn to you. Talk to me about why rents are so high. Someone who's cynical might say landlords are trying to make as much as they can from a hot rental market. Is that the case?
I have no idea how to respond. I don't rent rental property. I'm not a landlord. I represent landlords.
What do you hear from your clients?
What I hear from my clients over and over is that the people that Frank sees and that the people that I see are the vast minority of tenants. There are over 17,000 rental units in Portland, and almost all of them have tenants that don't wind up in eviction.
So in your evaluating the situation, although eviction may be a problem for some, it is not a widespread chronic problem in this state.
I think that there's a lot of political forces which try to portray this false dichotomy between landlords and tenants. There's politicians on the left who want to create this problem and make landlords swallow hard and volunteer. There's forces on the right who want to spend as little as possible to solve a funding and housing situation, which is fundamentally cyclical. Frank has been doing this work for three decades. I've been doing this work for 25 years. We have seen the market rise and fall and rise and fall. We've seen rental rates go up and go down. And unfortunately, wages and wealth aren't in lockstep with the property market. And I think that's really the fundamental situation.
Do you guys have a sense of how many more affordable housing units are needed?
Oh, it looks, if you look at the numbers, that there's 57, I mean, we represented over 2,000 families last year in evictions, okay? Pine Tree Legal Assistance did. All of those people needed a voucher in order to have long-term affordability for their housing, just about all of them. So we're talking about a very significant increase in the number of units that are subsidized.
And I think what Frank just said is very telling, which is that Pine Tree represents and represents those clients very, very ably. Pine Tree is a substantial law firm, and the people that work there are experts in poverty law, and Frank is an expert in poverty law. And there are thousands of evictions where Pine Tree doesn't represent the tenant. And the story in those evictions is probably something different.
And how so? What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, the tenants whom my clients send to me so that my tenants can regain control of their property aren't always poor and aren't always frail and aren't always families. You know, I think that Pine Tree does an excellent job of reaching out and finding those who need them in that way. And, you know, the work they do is important, but it's not the whole story.
Reading between the lines here is what you're saying. There are a lot of landlords who have some tenants that are kind of nightmares.
People get evicted for mainly for two reasons. People get evicted because they don't pay their rent, and people get evicted because they are trouble for the people who live in their building, the people who live in their neighborhood, the people who live in their community. That's the overwhelming majority. Most of the tenants who get evicted on a 30-day notice are problem tenants.
Frank.
Well, that I'd like to touch on two issues. First, the cyclical issue. It may be cyclical for landlords or investors, okay? But it's not cyclical for tenants, okay? Homelessness is not cyclical, okay? It doesn't do any good for a family that's becoming homeless to think, well, in 6 months or a year, the housing market's going to change and I'm going to be able to afford a rent, okay? The cyclical, I mean, our clients, homelessness exists one day at a time, and the impact of homelessness on families exists one day at a time. And second of all, as far as the 30-day notice is concerned without cause, I mean, we see it used in a lot of different areas. We see it used when a tenant complains about a problem with the unit that needs to be fixed, like a leaking roof or bed bugs or something else of that nature, and then they get served with a 30-day notice. And while Maine law does provide some protections to people who complain to their landlords about problems in the unit, those tenants often have trouble accessing those protections. First of all, they have to find legal representation usually to be able to access those protections. And second of all, it's sometimes, unfortunately, not a very high burden that the landlord has to meet in order to rebut the presumption of retaliation.
Well, let me talk about this idea with the at-will ability for tenants to, or landlords to evict tenants.
And vice versa.
And really?
Oh, yes. At-will is an agreement between landlords and tenant that the tenant will have no obligation to stay in place. The
so even if someone signed a year-long lease, they can still?
No, quite the opposite. If the opposite of an at-will tenancy is a tenancy on a lease. If someone comes to my clients and says, I want a year-long lease, I cannot think of a single time in 20 years that my client has said, I won't give you one. Landlords value good tenants. Good tenants are good landlords' best asset.
So, I mean, while it's true, so a tenant at will can terminate a tenancy on a tenant can terminate the tenancy on 30 days' notice without a reason. It's not an equal playing field between a landlord and a tenant. I mean, in a housing market like Portland or anywhere, most places in southern Maine right now, tenants are desperate for housing. They're not the ones who are giving the 30-day notices. And I'd like to take, I mean, so the concept that a 30-day notice is used as kind of a shortcut for a landlord to get rid of a problem tenant, I mean, the experience and the consequences of homelessness, someone who has to leave their home on a really short notice, can be severe. Children can lose access to the school. They have to move to a different school district. People lose housing. My mother-in-law used to say, three moves is as good as a fire. We have tenants who are having to move repeatedly, and they're losing their personal property. And also on a personal, on a very practical level, I mean, in order to move, the tenant has to have first month rent, they have to have second month's rent, they have to have last month's rent, and they have to have security deposit. I mean, tenants are not just picking up and moving unless they have some place to move to, and it's becoming more and more difficult in markets, especially like Portland, Westbrook, Southern Maine, to find or to find any sort of affordable housing for low-income tenants that we represent.
Where I was headed to, though, by asking you about being an at-will state, is Maine the norm? Or if I'm traveling from state to state, am I going to find different laws places?
It depends. I mean, the only state that has statewide for cause that you can only be evicted for cause is New Jersey. There are several municipalities throughout the country that require that a tenant can only be evicted if they've done something wrong. But the concept that you can be evicted on a 30-day notice or some other notice like that without reason if you don't have a lease is common throughout the nation.
Sam.
And it's important to note that eviction practice and eviction law does vary a lot around the country. And that's why it's difficult to rely on national statistics and national studies. For example, in New York, and I believe in New Jersey, if somebody gets evicted, not only do they get an order that says you have to leave, but they get a money judgment which enters against them for a particular amount of money. And in Maine, that is not the case. Telling somebody, you can have your apartment back now, landlord. Tenant, you need to leave the landlord's apartment now, doesn't result in any money judgment against the tenant at all.
When you say money judgment, a fine?
No fine, no finding of any particular amount. Let's say that you don't pay your rent for a couple of months. You now owe, shall we say, $2,000, because I have two fingers. And the landlord needs to show the court that there is some rent unpaid, but the court doesn't say you, the tenant, owe the landlord $2,000 and we order you to pay. The court only says we find that there is some rent unpaid and you have to leave and you get your apartment back.
Go ahead.
That goes exactly to the point, though. Like you owe 2 months' rent, you owe $2,000 or maybe $1,600 for 2 months' rent. Those rents are fundamentally unaffordable for our clients.
And in a private market, that's how things work.
Well, and that's the point. Okay. Yeah. In a private market, that's the way things work. And that's why, in order for low income people to be able to afford housing, there has to be a really substantial subsidized housing market, and we're actually going in the wrong direction.
Frank, you won't find me disagreeing at all, and I think that really underscores the false dichotomy between landlord and tenant.
And I'm not trying to pick on you, Sam, but for example, one of the things that happens in many subsidized housing units, like rural housing, for example, landlords or developers can prepay to get out of the restrictions that go with the mortgages that they got to purchase those properties and develop affordable housing. We're finding that that's happening in the state of Maine. People are prepaying and no longer these properties that were providing affordable housing in many cases no longer are.
So we're going to hear from some people who are trying to develop affordable housing in just a minute. First, though, we do need to take a break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Waterfront Concerts. Pleased to present the return of Celtic Thunder live at Merrill Auditorium, September 27th. Tickets at waterfrontconcerts.com. And Abbey Museum, Maine's only Smithsonian affiliate, opens 7 days a week in Bar Harbor and Acadia National Park, abbeymuseum.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Trump's billionaire friend who helped connect Trump to Arab princes. We talk with New York Times reporter David Kirkpatrick. We'll also discuss his new book about covering the Egyptian Revolution and subsequent coup when Kirkpatrick was Cairo bureau chief. It's also about the Obama administration's response. Join us.
And you can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and today on the program, we're talking about eviction in Maine. Joining me in our studio, Frank D'Alessandro, who is an attorney with Pine Tree Legal. Also, Sam Sherry is here. He's an attorney who represents landlords. He's also a bassist in the Portland Jazz Orchestra and the Tom Porter Four. You might recognize the name Tom Porter. We invite you to join our conversations. Call 1-800 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Nathan Zantin. He is president of the Zantin Company. Nathan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little about your company and about the affordable housing market in Maine.
Sure. The Zantin Company is a small but very active real estate development company based in Portland. We specialize in developing rental housing for a mix of incomes, mostly households below 60% of the area median income, but usually with a quarter to a third of the apartments in these projects being market rate, so therefore available to people without regard to income. So we call that mixed income. We do a mixed income housing model, and we manage those properties ourselves with our own in-house management company called Saco Falls Management, and we have about 400 apartments around the state, with 114 more under construction or in development.
Is the reason that your units are mixed for mixed income levels because it's just too hard to do something targeted to financially challenging to do something only targeting low-income families?
No. Well, it is. The subsidies that which are required to do housing that's affordable to low-income families are very, very limited, and there's tremendous competition for those few resources. So it is hard to do it, but the reason that we mix the market rate units in is more that we want to achieve kind of a mixture of folks in our apartment buildings, a variety of different walks of life and backgrounds, because we just think that that's a healthier environment for our tenants than having concentrations of entirely low-income tenants.
Give us a sense from your perspective of the need for affordable housing in Maine. What are some of the stories that you're hearing on the ground?
Sure. Well, in terms of the affordable housing market in Maine, it's kind of like the market for affordable health care in Maine. It's almost unlimited. In fact, we're so far from meeting the needs of that market right now that all that we in the industry can really see is the size of the need rather than how close we are to filling it. So, for example, the Maine Affordable Housing Coalition, which our company is a member of, they hired Apton Associates, a research firm out of Cambridge, Massachusetts, in 2015. And Apton Associates did a study of the need for senior housing rental units at below market rates across the state of Maine. And they found that there's a need for about 9,000 of these senior.
Wow. And
that probably means there's about another 15,000 non-senior rental housing units that are needed, just given the ratio of seniors to non-seniors. So we're looking at about 24,000 rental units at below market rates that are needed across the state of Maine right now. And our industry is only creating between 250 and 300 of them a year. So you can see that what we're doing is just a tiny drop in the bucket of the need.
What needs to change?
We need to have a political consensus in our country that housing people who are vulnerable is important. For example, we have a political consensus that a strong military is important, and we spend $500, $600, $700 billion a year on the military. We don't have that same consensus at this point about housing, because we only spend as a nation about $30 or $40 billion a year on housing. So it all comes down to what our politicians in Washington are and in state capitals are willing to appropriate. And that comes down to what they're hearing from their constituents.
Nathan, thank you so much for calling in. That's Nathan Zantin, president of the Zantin Company. I saw both of you nodding as he was talking. You agree with the solution that he
Well, that's part
puts
of the
forward.
Solution. I mean, right now you have, in the short term, while we're waiting for those 24,000 units, we have tenants being evicted because they can't pay their rent and facing homelessness, not for only for them, but for their children. And the consequences of homelessness are long term and very expensive. And it's horrible for the individual. It's expensive to remedy later on the problems that result from homelessness. And by having this sort of shortfall means that our courts are full of eviction cases and people are knocking down pine trees door to get assistance.
Sam, do you want to answer that? Oh, in an email from Lincoln County, can a landlord legally evict a woman in her 60s with PTSD for getting an emotional support dog? The landlord has sent notice to quit. What can this tenant do? Nowhere to go. So emotional support animals are really a hot button issue in so many, whether you're flying or going on an airplane or going into a hospital. What are the rights of landlords and tenants?
Well, a landlord, it's illegal for a landlord to evict a tenant because they have an emotional support animal.
So any emotional support animal, even one that has been certified by a mail order?
I think you have to have medical evidence that you need the emotional support animal. If you have evidence that you need the emotional support animal, you cannot be evicted because you have an emotional support animal. One of the cases we see a lot of is like no dog, no pets allowed. An emotional support animal is not a pet. If a tenant has an emotional support animal, the landlord cannot refuse to rent to them or try to evict them, even if otherwise the landlord does not allow pets in the building.
I've heard the director of the Maine Human Rights Commission say that a support animal is exactly like a cane. You don't evict someone because they have a cane.
All right. We'll go to Meg, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Meg. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. A few years back, there was a horrific fire in Portland. And since then, I understand that landlords they're required to register their rental properties. I'm curious how many landlords are, in fact, registering their rental properties, and what's the penalty for not doing this, for not registering rental property?
That's a great question, and it's a great point. After the Noyce Street fire, the city of Portland required landlords to register their units, and the city expected to get 16,500 registrations for rental units, and what they received was over 17,250 rental unit registrations. What that reflects is that the analysis in this area and the statistics in this area and the talk about what was or wasn't needed was all based on assumptions which proved to be materially inaccurate. So I think that the city's first effort to get registration really yielded some valuable and useful data. If somebody doesn't register their unit and they're ultimately caught, and that does happen, then there are fines and there are substantial problems for the landlords. It's important for the city to know what the housing stock is, and it's important for the city to be able to contact actual people who own or who own the companies that own these properties so that the city can get its business done and handle emergencies appropriately.
Meg, thanks for your call. Is registration the norm in other cities in Maine? Do you all know?
It is not.
There are a few, but not many.
In fact, one of the things that is needed is not only affordable housing, but safe and secure affordable housing for low-income people. And one of the things that needs to be required is that all municipalities not require registration. There's many municipalities in the state of Maine that do not have code enforcement offices and do not have codes that require any sort of requirements to meet, to meet code for rental units. And so one of the things that needs to happen is that all municipalities need to be required to have codes that cover rental housing, and they need to employ code enforcement officers who are going to do inspections and enforce codes.
We'll go to Bob, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I've only heard part of the program, so I may repeat ground that's been covered. But I'd like to put a little bit of international perspective on this, having lived overseas quite a bit. For instance, in around Amsterdam, if you want to evict a tenant when there are no readily visible problems, such as the damage to the unit or arrears in payments, you need to give that tenant at least a year. And the only way to expedite that is to find other living quarters for that tenant. And frankly, I think 30 days for a family having to find new schools, new accommodations, strikes me as barbaric.
Bob, thanks for your call.
I just want to follow up on that. We had an eviction. It was in one of the northern parts of the state where someone from England who owned the property, and they were trying to evict this tenant. And they were able to evict the tenant, and then they talked to the Pine Tree attorney who was there, and they said, well, the person was low income. This person can just go into public housing. There's public housing for people like this, like there is in England. And our client and our attorney had to explain to this person from England that, no, the type of public housing, the housing security that there would be in England does not exist in the state of Maine or in the United States. And that landlord was really taken back by that.
Sam.
The fundamental fact that underlies a no-cause eviction is that that only applies where the landlord and the tenant don't have a lease. If there's a lease, there's a lease for a term. During that term, that's the contract. That's the deal. That's the agreement. And so no-cause eviction is usually used by landlords to get rid of folks that their neighbors want to get rid of. That is the first and foremost reason that my clients come to me for a no-cause eviction.
Bob, thank you for your call. Meredith writes on Facebook, there's a story behind this story about the multitude of neglectful landlords in Maine. Yes, it costs a lot of money to keep a building safe and decent for tenants, but if you want to be a landlord, that's what you're obligated to do. Because Maine is a tenant-at-will state, landlords can give 30 days to a renter to leave, and this is what we're talking about. She says, even though this ostensibly protects both parties, in reality, tenants are often told to leave. And she goes on, but I'm going to guess that there are bad apples, for use of a better expression, on both sides of this equation, or all sides of this equation, yes?
Well, we do believe that everyone should have affordable housing and affordable housing options for decent, safe housing. And there's nothing that should prevent the landlord from evicting a tenant who's destroying a property, okay? But just like in any other area of law, a landlord should have to prove that the tenant is actually doing that before they become homeless.
Is there any movement? Is there any bill in the legislature that would change the law?
There's not currently anything like that.
The existing law is very clear. If the tenant, the tenant's guests, the tenant's occupants damage the property, that's not a 30-day problem. That's a 7-day problem, and the landlord has to prove it.
Right. And so there is an option for landlords to get rid of problem tenants. And it's with a 7-day notice as opposed to a 30-day notice, but they have to prove it in court. And the argument that, well, it might be difficult for us to prove it in court is not an excuse to deprive people who are otherwise going to become homeless of an opportunity to defend themselves and say, no, this shouldn't happen to me or my family.
Let me ask you that, a 7-day problem. If someone, let's say a landlord's trying to get rid of a tenant who is everybody else in the neighborhood, in the building is complaining about, are they even going to get a court date within 7 days?
Well, that's an excellent question. When Frank says a 30-day problem, when I say a 7-day problem, what we're talking about is the beginning of this process. That would be a 30-day notice or a 7-day notice. The usual eviction in the state of Maine goes forward over a period of 6 to 12 weeks. It's fast, but it's not instantaneous, unless people agree otherwise. And that's a really important point. If a tenant loses an eviction case, one of the things that means is that they probably won't be able to get Section 8 help again. So tenants have a real incentive to work things out with landlords. They want to hold on to the possibility that they can get Section 8 help in the future. Landlords have an incentive to work things out with tenants. Things might happen quicker. Things might be less expensive. And the prospect, the probability that the property is damaged as the tenant leaves is all diminished. So again, it goes to this false opposition. There are incentives on both sides for people to resolve these disputes. Unfortunately, that seems to pop up with a negative implication of quote-unquote informal eviction. You know, for my clients, that's just basic sound practice, working with people to work things out for mutual advantage.
Do you want to say something, Frank, before we go
to a
break?
Well, I mean, the issue is, we do negotiate most of our cases, okay? The problem is that the current system has not resulting in the creation or the maintenance of a sufficient number of affordable housing units for low-income people that are safe and secure for those people.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Maine Calling, and we're talking about evictions. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Portland attorney William McHugh, representing clients in planning, administering, and problem-solving estates and trusts since 1996.
Millions of relics of Black Americana are being stored on a property in the California desert.
The very last container there has got most of the albums, probably 100 black mannequins. And this one here is more art.
I'm Ari Shapiro. How an enormous collection came to be. Plus, voters go to the polls as the primaries enter the home stretch. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. And tonight at 10 on Maine Public Television, join us for Frontline, Documenting Hate, Charlottesville. This Frontline documentary collaboration with ProPublica looks at those involved in the 2017 Charlottesville rally. That's tonight at 10 on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Understanding the Eviction Process. My guests are two attorneys. Sam Sherry represents landlords, and Frank D'Alessandro is with Pine Tree Legal and represents people facing eviction. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now, Dana Totman. He is president and CEO of Avesta Housing. Dana, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Give us a sense of how great the need for affordable housing is in Maine from your perspective.
The need is simply huge. We have about 2,200 affordable apartments in southern Maine. And last year we had 3,800 people apply to us, and we were able to help only 390. So the need's huge. Public housing authorities in Maine currently have 14,000 households on their wait list. So no matter how you look at it, it's just staggering what the need is versus our very limited supply.
What are the impediments to building more affordable housing? Is it simply that construction costs and labor costs make buildings too expensive?
That certainly doesn't help matters. However, I think we also must acknowledge just how low-income folks coming to us looking for housing, how low-income their incomes really are. The average income of those coming to the public housing authorities and those coming to us looking for housing is about $14,000 or $15,000 per year. So there is simply no way for the market to ever get housing down that is affordable to folks with these low incomes. So the real challenge is coming up with the various federal and state resources to help bridge that gap between what it costs to build housing and what the rents are that people will be paying.
Dana, who's looking? What type of people are looking for affordable housing?
About a third of those coming to us are seniors, in many cases on fixed incomes, in many cases very old, older seniors who may have recently lost a spouse and they want to move to a place that has some greater socialization. We find seniors in particular when they live alone, and particularly in rural Maine, that the isolation is oftentimes leads to depression and worsening health. So seniors are a large number that come to us. As well, we have a lot of young individuals that might be working in the restaurants or offices here in southern Maine. There are about 1,200 homeless people every night around the state. And then there are a lot of new Mainers that have immigrated here and are trying to get their feet under them, and they too are looking for housing. So I really think it's sort of young individuals, seniors, homeless persons, and new Mainers. Over half are one-person households.
You know, I want to ask you this question because I know Avesta really has contacts outside of the state. You know, this is not just a problem in Maine. There are places all over the country, I'm thinking about San Francisco, New York, where there is a real lack of affordable housing. Rents are sky high. Are there other places in this country that are getting this right, who are doing things that Maine ought to look at as a model?
Some states, I think, are a little more creative and resourceful, perhaps, than we have been. North Dakota has a new had a state housing tax credit that has been a great help to that state. So I think some states, North Dakota, Minnesota comes to mind, have a little more creative solutions, and largely it's government solutions, whether it's a jiggering of the tax code to help with affordable housing, or actual state appropriations or other municipal incentives.
Well, thank you so much, North Dakota.
North Dakota is has a great potential that I think we should look at.
Dana, thanks so much for calling in. Dana Totman, president and CEO of Avesta Housing. We'll move to Alisa, who's calling from Orono. Alisa, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am curious if your guests have any insight on how the tendency for people to turn their apartments into Airbnbs or other vacation rentals, if that's having a noticeable impact. It seems like, especially in places that are popular, like Portland, and even into Biddeford now, anywhere in Southern Maine, looking at apartments, things are more and more turning into private hotels and vacation rentals. And I can't imagine that doesn't have an effect.
Sure, Lisa. I think you're asking one of the big questions of our day, and a lot of debate underway about how much these short-term rentals are affecting the rental market for the rest of us. What do you think, Sam?
It's a great question. It's a great topic. Different towns, different municipalities have set up different ordinances, different rules, regulations regarding people renting out their properties. And so things can vary dramatically from one side of the bridge to another. But it is hard, challenging work to be a good landlord. And there are some landlords who say, gee, I could make more money and have different and perhaps fewer problems if I saw different people every week than if I did this for long-term tenancy.
Frank, do you think it's having an impact?
I think it is having a pretty negative impact on the availability of affordable housing. And I think affordable housing is a term that's kind of thrown around. So one of the first caller you had in, Mr. Zantan, was talking about affordable housing being less than 60% of the median income. When we talk about affordable housing, we're really talking about more what the caller from Avesta was talking about, someone who's earning a household with $14,000 or $15,000 a year. And those are very different definitions of what affordable is and the help that is needed for a tenant to actually be able to long-term maintain housing for themselves and their children. The other population that was not mentioned by the caller from Avesta, who desperately needs affordable housing, or people who are disabled and facing other sort of medical issues. One of the things that we touched on earlier was the need for service animals and how a service animal is not a pet. But there are people who need reasonable accommodations as a result of their medical problems for various number of reasons. And when people ask me what the biggest difference is between now and the time I started working was the cuts, the repeated cuts in services for people with mental health and other medical issues. And a lot of times it feels like a pine tree when we're doing eviction cases, we've turned into the medical provider of last resort, where we're trying to scramble around and get the needed medical services for a client so that they can maintain their housing.
I have an email from Linda. What should a landlord do if a tenant has been asked repeatedly to leave and will not? See lawyer, sheriff?
Well, you can't see the sheriff until you've started the eviction process with a notice to quit. You won't be surprised to hear this lawyer say, consult a local lawyer who's used to representing landlords.
All right.
One of the things that we do actually have on our website, so we do, like I mentioned earlier, we represented over 2,000 people in eviction cases last year, but we also have a lot of client education materials, and we got over 600,000 hits on our website just for our landlord-tenant materials. And I've heard a number of landlords actually say that we have one specific item in the rights of tenants in Maine, which is, I think, a really good client ed piece, and I know a lot of landlords actually rely upon it.
Sure. So we'll put that resource on our website. And a lot of people, Sam, are at some point in their life going to be first-time landlords. And is there somewhere they can turn to sort of learn more about?
Sure. I'm a member and a board member of the Southern Maine Landlords Association, and part of our job is to help landlords avoid reinventing the wheel. It's a great group oriented toward smaller and medium-sized landlords, and I encourage people to seek us out.
We'll go to Rose, who's calling from Biddeford. Hi, Rose. Go ahead.
Hi. Excellent topic. Thank you for letting me ask my question. I was wondering if you could ask Mr. Zanton what his rate of eviction is at the mill at Circle Falls.
Oh, you know, he called into the program. He's not with us anymore.
Okay. Well, I'd like to talk about this or have someone give me an answer, but it doesn't have to be him. Apparently, accommodations for the developmentally disabled were ignored there, and a lot of people lost their Section 8 until Pine Tree Legal came to represent them.
Are you familiar with this case? No, Frank isn't. I'm sorry, Rose. Nobody in this room is familiar with the specific case. So we're going to have to move on. We're going to go to Vanessa, who's calling from Hiram. Hi, Vanessa. Go ahead.
Hello. I've been thinking about the subject of housing for quite some time, and I live in Hiram, and it's like a ghost town now. And many towns around my area also ghost towns with very nice houses that are empty. And I wish so much that the government, on local and federal government, would put a big push towards getting people to fill up these towns and get them living again and get these houses filled up and help people to do that. I realized people would have to commute. Things would have to be worked out. But literally, year after year, wonderful houses are empty and sometimes just going to pot.
I think your comment really underscores the broader point, which is that housing is a societal problem and that particular evictions are a dim reflection or a small symptom of a much broader topic and issue and concern in society, both in our state and more broadly.
One of the other types of cases Pine Tree does a lot of is foreclosure defense work. And one of the issues that happened as a result of the recession and all those foreclosures was a lot of foreclosures taking place in apartment buildings. And in various areas of the states, most notably in Lewiston, a large number of what had previously been affordable rental units to our clients were foreclosed upon, were not maintained, and many of them were destroyed and removed.
Vanessa, thank you for your call. We have an email from Greg. There's a humanitarian cat shelter in Maine, Safe Haven, that supports 60 cats at a time in their shelter manned by volunteers. They also have a thrift store in the Wells Plaza that seeks to raise money. After 3 years of paying a market fair rental, their landlord tripled their rent in an attempt to clear their tenancy. Can that landlord get away legally with that over-the-top increase?
The only limitation on a rent increase for someone who doesn't have, so if someone has a lease, typically you can't raise the rent during the term of the lease. Otherwise, you can raise the rent after giving the legally required notice as long as the rental unit is not in violation of the Maine Warranty of Habitability Act, which requires certain basic things be done for the unit. But otherwise, there's really no limit on how high the landlord can raise the rent.
And it's worth noting that the rules, the laws that apply to commercial tenancies like the cat shelter are different from the rules that apply to residential tenancies, which is what we've been talking about for most of today.
Okay. I want to ask each of you sort of, as we wrap up the program today, about best practices. I'm sure both of you see situations where it's almost too late. And if somebody had done something differently a few months earlier, it might not be at the place it is. So with this last couple minutes, Frank, what is your advice to tenants who suddenly foresee that this is not going to be good? I've lost my job. I've lost a source of income. Something's going on. I'm afraid for my future.
Well, there are some government benefit programs that are out there, like the Municipal General Assistance Program, but those are usually not a long-term solution. The problem is if we have a client who's lost their job and they're just barely making it, there's not any good solutions, okay? Someone can apply for general assistance, someone can apply for another job as much as they can. They can try to reach out to their landlord and work something out, but ultimately they've got to get the job back because there's just so much unaffordable housing, so many people who just can't afford their rents.
Sam?
If there's any message that I can convey to people beyond compassion for folks who are in a tough place or a tough moment in their lives, it's talk. Talk and listen. Work with the people who matter. Work with your landlord. Don't let things wait until the last moment, because the longer things go, the more things narrow up and the range of possibilities gets grimmer and dimmer.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for being here. Frank D'Alessandro, an attorney with Pine Tree Legal, and Sam Sherry, an attorney who represents landlords. Of course, continue to listen this week to Susan Sharon's series on eviction in Maine. John Keimel ran the board today. Our volunteer, Rick Austin, answered your calls. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join host Keith Shortall for a conversation about the status of Maine's lobster fishery. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.